The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
The family of Limerick man Jason Corbett, who was beaten to death in 2015, are in the United States to ask the judge to fast-track the retrial of his killers, Molly and Tom Martins. Now, I'm joined now by Ralph Regal, who will be at the hearing in Lexington in North Carolina. Ralph, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, we know that they were released pending a retrial. So what's happening in the court today?
Essentially, what's happening today, Pat, is it's a pre-trial hearing, and the big element that the family want to hear is the confirmation of the retrial date. Now, you might remember last March, there was another hearing like this. The judge set out very, very firm conditions about the retrial, in particular about media coverage and access to the court. In May, we were supposed to get a confirmed retrial date, and for some unexplained reason, that didn't happen. And the family really have been pressing since then for a confirmed date for the retrial. So we're hoping to get that today. There may also be a number of pre-trial motions in terms of the witness list. Now, as you mentioned, the original convictions for second-degree murder followed a trial here in Davidson County back in July and August of 2017. There was a significant number of witnesses in that case. However, this time we're expecting the two children of Jason Corbett to be on that witness list. Now, Jack, who's 18, Sarah, who is 16, they were present in the property on the evening their father was beaten to death, but they did not feature in the original trial by ruling of the trial judge, Judge David Lee. And that ruling was instrumental in the Martins, Tom and Molly Martins, winning first a ruling from the Court of Appeals here in North Carolina, and then laterally before the North Carolina Supreme Court for the original conviction to be quashed and a retrial to be ordered.
Meantime, they are free.
They are, Pat, and they were freed early last year. And I think one of the things that the family are most concerned, if not upset about, is the fact that they have been walking free really for almost 2 years at this point. And they're very, very concerned that this retrial may not happen until the summer of 2023. And they don't want to have that happen. They are pressing to have the retrial at the earliest possible opportunity. And ideally, they would like to see it happen sometime before Christmas.
Jack is 18, will be doing the Leaving Cert in the summer of 2023. Sarah is 16, will be doing the Junior Cert in the same summer.
That's right, Pat. Correct. They both celebrated birthdays over recent weeks. And the family's position is that while they understand there are logistical difficulties facing the judiciary here in North Carolina, not least because of the COVID-19 pandemic, they believe it is exceptionally unfair for the children to be living their lives with this constantly hanging over them. And just to put it in context, their father was found beaten to death in August of 2015. So these two children have lived almost half of their lives under the shadow of, first of all, a murder investigation, then the build-up to the original trial, then a lengthy and protracted appeals process, and now this extended delay waiting for the retrial. And the family fear that not only is it unfair to the children, but that they run the risk of justice delayed, is justice denied.
Is it likely to be resolved today, or will the judge listen to everything and then defer a decision?
I think the judge, we're hoping that the judge will certainly confirm a retrial date today, but I think it's very much going to be at the behest and agreement of both the prosecution and the two separate defense teams for Tom and Molly Martins. Of course, Molly is 38. She was the second wife of Jason Corbett. Jason was a widower. He lost his first wife just 6 weeks after the birth of his daughter, Sarah. And of course, his father-in-law, Tom, then is a retired FBI agent. And the family maintained that Jason was killed essentially over a row about the custody of the two children. Molly suffered from lengthy mental health problems, and the family were convinced that Jason was about to return to Ireland to bring his two children home. And as a result, he was targeted by Tom and Molly Martins.
All right, Ralph, thank you very much for that report from Lexington in North Carolina in the United States. Well, now it's time for the Green Scene with Dr. Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland. We'll be talking about an extraordinarily generous piece of philanthropy from a billionaire in a few moments. But first, as companies explore new ways to play their part in tackling climate change, the rush to create new products can make companies fall into the trap of greenwashing, appearing more environmentally friendly than they really are. So there's a process called carbon accounting, which might put a stop to that. And Ruth is here with me to explain.
Good morning, Pat. Yes, this is kind of the maths, a really important maths that might help us have a more livable planet. And it sounds a bit dull, but it's really about calculating how much carbon is in the stuff that we buy, essentially. And researchers are doing this by something called life cycle assessment. And again, sort of to break it down to the simplest, it's about how much carbon did it take to grow the raw materials? How much energy did it take to manufacture the product, to transport it, all the way to how much carbon is released when the product, when we're finished with it and we throw it away. So it sounds simple. That's kind of one side of the equation. The other side, though, now more and more companies are trying to see, well, how could they offset some of that carbon? Yeah. And, you know, one way could be, well, if we're using renewable energy when we're making the product, then that helps that side of the equation. And in fact, we're even seeing products now where companies are trying to put CO2 into the products. But it's a bit of a minefield, and it's an area at the moment that's not very well regulated. And so I thought, you know, and one of the challenges, of course, is our massive global supply chains. And that's where things kind of get really complicated.
Okay, now you want to give me the example of a T-shirt manufactured in Cambodia, and you might see that in one of the chain stores that you see. The one you're buying is made in Cambodia. Why is that complicated?
Well, it's complicated because you might buy it and you might even have a label on it which says we've actually offset the carbon that was used to make this T-shirt, so you can buy it and feel good about it. Now, the problem is, of course, because the supply chains are so complex, companies are using an average. So they're saying on average, a T-shirt might use about 7 kilograms of carbon. But in fact, if it's coming from Cambodia, while Cambodia, it doesn't actually produce cotton, it imports that cotton from somewhere else. And it actually comes from southern China, much of the cotton. China's a big cotton producer. But it's not produced in the south of China either, Pat. It's produced in the north of China. So it's already had to travel from the north to the south of China before it even gets on a boat to Cambodia.
But China doesn't have enough cotton to supply the market. So what happens then?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. So they could be importing some of their raw cotton from as far afield as Australia or Brazil. So the raw material for that T-shirt might have gone 1.5 times around the globe before it even gets to Cambodia. So we could be talking about 70 kilograms of carbon in that T-shirt. So you can see why the maths matters.
They do. The mathematics certainly do. But is there a standard way that everyone globally can agree this is the way we count carbon?
So a group called the Global CO2 Initiative is trying to come up with a standardized way, and it's needed more than ever. Because the other thing, Pat, is there's good news here. Because companies are starting to put CO2 into products. They're putting into things like runners, they're putting it into concrete, they're putting it into detergents. So we have to incentivize the companies that are really sucking CO2 out of the air and putting it into products. So that global standard is really important, and we should all be calling for that from our regulators.
There are other things as well. The amount of water used, for example, to grow almonds in California, or the amount of water that might be used to wash things, causing pollution in rivers. You know, they can tell what next year's fashion colour is going to be by looking at the colour of rivers in China.
Absolutely. So, you know, this is only one element of the impact of our stuff. And I mean, all of this boils down to we all need to have less stuff. I mean, that's the simple answer. Yeah. But in the meantime, we want responsible, responsible buying. And this good labelling helps us to do that.
Now, the other story is about a man who definitely wants less stuff because he's given his company away, effectively. This is the owner of a company called Patagonia.
Yeah, this is Yvon Chouinard, who has owned Patagonia for 50 years. And a lot of listeners will be familiar with Patagonia. They make outdoor goods, jackets, ski wear, that kind of thing. And they've always been a pioneer. So they've been in business for 50 years with this family running them. You know, they were one of the first companies to have on-site childcare. They give employees the day off on good surf days. And back in the 80s, they started giving 1% of their profits to environmental causes. So they've already given over 150 million to those causes. But in a really radical step by the founder recently, they have given the company in its entirety to Planet Earth. So they've rather than giving it to shareholders or going public, they've split it into two entities. They've given 2% and all of the voting stock to an entity called the Patagonia Purpose Trust, and the rest of the 98% of the company's stock has gone to a not-for-profit called the Holdfast Collective. And these two legal entities will make sure that every dollar of profit from the Patagonia company in perpetuity will go towards saving the planet, towards environmental causes. They're going to invest in sustainable businesses. They're going to invest in communities that are protecting the environment. And they're just going to give money to charities that are fighting the climate crisis.
Mm. Now, what's a benefit corporation?
So a B Corp or a benefit corporation, again, it's, you know, we talk a lot regulation. While it's dull, it's really, really important when it comes to environmental protection. A B Corp is a certification that a company can get if it meets a rigorous set of ethical and environmental standards. And Patagonia was one of the first to be a B Corp. In Ireland, it's early days for us. We have 12. But again, I would encourage you can go and look online. Urban Volt, which is a solar fitting company, was the first. And we have some of our great food companies like Strong Roots and Fid and Cully and Sully. They're all B Corp. So it's one thing that we can look for when we're out shopping to make sure our money goes to the right places.
Dr. Ruth Riemann, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.